episode of Freaking Awesome Podcast. It is Sunday, February 25th, 2018. I'm Benjamin Abaya, and joining me today is my brown twin brother, Lion. Oh, wait, I said that wrong. My twin brother, Brown Lion, John Abaya. That came out.
I'm also vegan now.
Yeah, that came out completely wrong. And Brown Lion. Mm-hmm. You're the Brown Lion of this podcast. Yeah, yes. So how are you?
What are those, Ben?
Brown Lions?
Yeah. Or I should say, what are those? Okay. That's how the, you know, kids,
I don't know,
say it these
if we're
days.
Spoiling it now for those who haven't.
No. Okay. That's how teenagers say questions. Like, how are you? And stuff like that now. That's straight up how my son.
I highly doubt that's how the teenagers talk nowadays.
I encounter probably one or two teenagers in my last 10 years, and that's how they talk to me.
Okay. Okay, that's interesting.
And they always point at my shoes, and they always, it's just silly how kids these days.
So how are you since we last spoke?
I'm okay. It's very cold. Weather reports, for some reason, it's, February? And for some reason, it's super cold now in Sacramento. I don't know why, but it was nice and sunny throughout January, and then all of a sudden, ice everywhere outside the car and stuff like that. And it takes me a while when I bring my kids to school to heat up the car, and I'm not used to that recently. So yeah, that's other than that, everything's great.
How do you, when it comes to your windshield being iced out, what's the remedy? Like, what do you do?
This might sound silly, but I literally, for each windshield, I take my breath and just blow on it, and then.
Oh, okay.
It takes probably, like, my kids go to school in 30 minutes, and it takes me those good 30 minutes just to take the ice out, and then I'll tell the kids, come on, let's all just blow our hot air onto the window, and then we all do it together.
Okay.
And then I'm realizing it's probably when we're doing this, we also have the heater inside the car on too, and we just do it all at the exact same time, and then. Within 30 minutes, the car is done, and I can see and drop them off in 2 minutes. And the 2 minute drive, the 30 minute waiting of the ice concludes with a 2 minute drive to school. That's it.
Okay. That makes absolutely no sense, but okay.
What?
I feel
that
like
makes perfect
for
sense.
Listeners, just message us or email us or tweet at us to find better remedies to help our brother.
I doubt there's anything better than that.
I think there's.
It's not like we have Vibrarian that can cure everything that we do in life.
Yeah, sadly we don't. So anyway, if you're new to the podcast, we usually discuss and give an impression of what we watched, listened, played, or read throughout the week, and we conclude the episode with a main discussion. This week's main discussion is the latest Marvel film, Black Panther. So we're looking forward to, I know it came out last weekend, but this is the only time we could record this episode, so and talk about this. A little, you know, behind the scenes, we actually recorded an episode last week, but it was lost because one of us accidentally deleted a file.
That or one of us moved the island and then we never found that file again.
Yes, that's actually true. That could be the reason why. And this is why we can never go back.
Yep.
Yeah. But before all that, we have a trailer talk. This week's trailer talk is Reboot the Guardian Code.
The Guardian Code will not stop me.
Megabyte.
I reactivated you. I control you.
Invade and infect.
You must be connected to the Sorcerer. Purge the system. Now. We need to stop that maniac before he starts the next world war.
Okay, guys. It's save the world time. No pressure.
Do the right thing.
You know what this means, right?
You are next generation Guardians. The first humans to defend cyberspace.
It's okay. We got this.
Vector! Gotcha. It's gonna blow.
I'm ready.
That is a snippet from the trailer Reboot the Guardian Code. It stars Ty Woods, Sydney Scottella, Ajay Parkin Freese, Gabriel Darku. I feel like I needed to work on these last names prior to the episode. But anyway, this is the IMD plot synopsis. The modern adaptation mixes live action with CG animation and tells the story of four teenagers who have been selected as the next generation guardians of cyberspace. They should just say mainframe, because that's what...
Yes, yes, that's actually a better term.
I don't know why they had that. Anyway, it's created by... This rendition is created by Michael Heffernson. In his resume, it seems like he's done other works when it comes to CG animation. So I think he has, like, the ability to do this. But anyway, John, you and I were huge fans of this show in the 90s. And we thought it was, like, astonishing, kind of cool that they took this CG animation to television, because prior to that, it was just Toy Story that did it, and, Bugs Life. But then in the 90s, late 90s, there's this television show. This and Beast Wars were the two main shows that utilized the CG animation. So what are your feelings after watching this trailer?
Watching this trailer just straight up just remind me of the reboot of Jumanji. I haven't watched that. I heard it's really good, but it has the same feeling of just kids or not even, kids going into this like video game, but instead of real life, it's in the mainframe or in this, like you said, it's like just cyberspace. And yeah, it looks interesting. I like that it still has the same effects of the original rebook when they go into the mainframe and whatnot. But I don't know. It looks like it is for kids, and it seems like there's a plot in the trailer where one of the mainframe characters comes out and into real life, and she is like, fish out of the water type story. And then, it is straight up. I know this show is straight up for kids. When we watched it, we were kids. I didn't understand half the things they mentioned in when I was a kid too, and the show previously. And then this one looks more like they're trying to ease in kids into this world more. But in the trailer, they show Megabyte, and that's kind of cool. He looks like the same old Megabyte. So I'm waiting. I don't know how... Do you even remember how the original reboot ends? Is there like this weird guardian thing that I totally forgot about?
I don't remember, but it did end like in a happy note. Like it didn't...
Yes.
It like actually had a finale and everything. And I don't remember what the like... Bob, Dot, or Enzo did in the original series, but I probably did end with like the guardians, but it says these are the first human guardians, so
yes, that's what I'm wondering. Back then, there was no human guardian, so I'm wondering if, or is this a beginning plot? No, it can't be a beginning plot.
It seems like it is. They say it's a reimagine, but it's basically a reboot.
Well, they said come out Megabyte, like the hacker guy. Yeah. I don't know who even plays a hacker in this. Mr. Robot guy. That straight up just looks like Mr. Robot, the style with the hood and everything. But watching this, I really hope, I probably won't watch this at all. I'll probably encourage my kids, like, check this out, just in case. And I'm really hoping they show Bob and Dot and Enzo just coming out and helping, with Frisket and whatnot. And I really like the villains in the original series. And I hope they even have, like, Hack and Slash and Hexadecimal and all them, just to, those are really cool characters back then. Like this and Batman the Anime Series had like similar tone of characters. Even I think there's like a character too, I forget his name, Mike the TV or something like that. He played like a character in the Marvel Comics arcade. I will talk about him later on in the show, but it's a person that loves game shows and puts people on game shows and stuff. That's why I remember. I don't entirely remember like everything about the show.
So yeah.
Hopefully I got that right.
Yeah, like I'm trying to read like what happened in the actual... It doesn't seem like they actually resolve. Like they actually hint as a cliffhanger in the last episode, it looks like, from what I'm reading. But for the original reboot. But it is interesting that they're taking this type of style of mixing live action with CG animation. But I do give them props that they're using the same exact CG animation from the 90s. Like they're not even trying to like update that version. They're like, oh, like these are the character styles. We're just going to stick to them. Like, why do we have to like be like super modern and everything?
Like it's like most of the, because this is a Netflix show, they updated a lot of the cartoons recently. Like what was the recent one they did? I think it's School Bus, the Magic School Bus. They updated that the style, but I'm really surprised they said, oh, let's just keep it this way because it looks cool.
I didn't know they even updated that too. So that's kind
of a lot of shows. Netflix, original content, remember?
But that is premiering, I think, like this month, I think, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me double check this. Yeah, next month, March. So
okay.
I probably watch the first episode, and if I'm not feeling it, I'll probably just not watch it at all.
Yeah.
It seems like it's taking so much liberties that I don't know why they even do this. Mm-hmm. A part of me thinks that they're actually using the same animation from this original one.
I think they are.
No, like literally, I think they're taking episodes from the original one and just reuse them, like how they did with like Mighty Morphin.
I have to rewatch that trailer again. I can't.
It just looks the same. It's too 90s.
But there's characters. They are original characters, though.
Yeah.
So did you like it when they showed that logo, that the classic white and black or yellow and black logo?
Yeah, I liked it. That's kind of cool.
I was like, that's kind of cool. Yeah. Like it only has a Stargate feel to it too. Yeah. When it's like they open a portal, but you know, like an empty room, but there's a huge portal going into the whatever universe or whatever you call it.
Yeah, it looks cool. It brings back a lot of nostalgia.
Mm-hmm. Netflix, they're good at reboots.
Yeah, and bringing the stuff. You heard like there are a couple shows on Netflix that are coming out that's literally about the 90s now. Like kids in the 90s.
Oh, yes. Something Sucks or something like that.
Everything Sucks. And there's like another one that is a 90s, sets in the 90s.
That's nostalgia now.
Yeah.
Can't wait until the next decade when it's the 2000s
Nostalgia. Nostalgia. Yeah, okay. Anyway.
Nostalgia? Nostalgia? Yeah. That sounds really weird.
In a couple years from now, we're going to have nostalgia in the 2010s. So looking forward to that.
Yep. Like what came out 2010?
Or the early 2000s, I'm thinking. Like the 2010s.
Mm-hmm. If you go by music-wise, and the 2000s are already classic music.
Which is odd the other way.
Yes.
But yeah, moving on from what we've been doing this week, John, what have you been doing this week?
So let's move on from a artificial intelligence cyberspace thing, and let's move on to a new thing, or not even new, new thing I read and finished over the course of this month about a robot that's part of the Marvel Universe, the one and only Vision. And I'm going to be discussing the trades or the collection of Tom King's version that he did. I think it's about 12 to 13 issues. I forgot how much, but they're collected in two trades. You can pick them up anywhere. Volume 1 is called Little Worse Than a Man, and Volume 2 is called A Little Better Than a Beast. And you can pick those up anywhere right now. They're fairly cheap. I think they're like $10 to $15 you can buy, but you can like go online and buy them for $6 digitally if you find sales and all. That's what I did. But yes, so it's one of my favorite new writers, Tom King. He is recently in DC. I haven't read any stuff in DC, but I read some of his stuff on Marvel. And then the artists are Gabriel Hernandez, Walta, Jordi Beller, and Clayton Cowles, and Mike Del Mondo. And yes, so you're familiar with Vision, right, Ben?
I am. He is the guy who's artificial intelligence in the Avenger films.
Yes, so he is that robot guy that is pushed into Age of Ultron in the last act. So this is about him, but he has a family of robots too, and it's a very interesting family of robots. He is in Washington, D.C. His family is located in Washington, D.C. He builds his family of robots. Their names are Virginia, Viv, and Vin. Virginia is a wife, and he's twin kids. They're both, one is a female, one's a male robot named Viv and Vin. And it's about their life as robots living in a human world and trying to adjust and stuff like that. But something horribly goes wrong, and it's them trying to fix this problem in the human way. And it's very unlike Marvel to have this type of story. It's a you could say like it's a bottled up story. Like anything, nothing really crosses over to this story as much. Like most of the time when you read a Marvel book, they'll have a crossover with another character. This one is a standalone story. It begins and ends, and ends in a way that they can still have wiggle room to continue the story. But it is a great story to read if you want to, if you're a fan of those type of themes about like artificial intelligence, what is human, what makes you a human, what makes you a robot, and whatnot. But it's just fun to see this. I've never seen this in any movies, or even I've never read too in a book where it's about the family, like a family of robots, and how they can adjust to this type of life, and how Vision is also balancing his home life and his superhero life, but he's also a robot. So it's an interesting read. I really like it. You can just pick it up anywhere right now. And I really want people to read this because it is really messed up, the story, and some of the stuff they go to and the areas they end up in is just crazy. Like, I've never seen this before in a Marvel book. Also, moving on to another Marvel book. I read two Marvel books, too, over the last couple of weeks. This one I also finished, too. It's very short. It's only collected, I think, about the same thing, like 12 to 13 trades. I might be wrong. It might be more than that. But this one is called... Ben, are you a fan of Battle Royale?
I am a fan of Battle Royale. And
are you a fan of Battlegrounds?
I am a fan of Battlegrounds. And... which one are you guys? I thought you were going to Fortnite.
So, if you watched the movie, read the book of Battlegrounds.
You read the movie and watched the book of Battlegrounds?
No. You can. All it is just 13 chapters of you hiding under a bush until the circle closes, and that's it.
Oh, wow.
And
you win the game. That is not an interesting book.
I know. You die in the end of the book. That's how that
It should be 100 chapters, technically.
How many chapters?
100 chapters.
Oh, I guess, yes. 100 chapters, each one depicting each person of the... That's actually a good idea, Ben.
Yeah.
You should email podcast that to yourself.
Yeah, I would.
But so this one is Marvel's take on that approach of 100 people on the island and trying to kill each other. But this one takes place... this is an older book. This one was released around 2012 and 2013.
So this is pre-Battlegrounds, PUBG.
What are you talking about?
Like, this was created not because of...
Oh, yes. So this is a response to all the Battle Royale and the Hunger Games type of movies. So if you look this up right now, Avengers Arena, I'm discussing about... if you look at the cover right now, it looks straight up like a Battle Royale cover, and it is basically that. This book is by Dennis Hopeless, Kev Walker, Dennis Hopeless is the one who wrote created and wrote the book, and Kev Walker is the artist behind it. And it is about 16 young students from the Marvel Universe, and like I said earlier, a villain named Arcade. I think I'm saying his name. It's spelled exactly like an arcade. brings these kids to his place, Murder World, and where he tries to kill each other to survive the 30 days on the island. Of course, but the twist in here, unlike Battle Royale and Battlegrounds, people have powers. So you have like I said, 16 students. So Ben, I'm gonna name the 16 students. Tell me to stop of when you recognize any of the the names. Like, you could tell me the power and everything. Okay I'm gonna start right now. Cammy.
Stop
Okay, what's her power?
I don't know who that is.
No. Oh. I'm saying, do you know any of these people? That's what I'm saying. Okay. Stop me of the people that you know of.
okay
Cammy.
So, well,
Hazmat,
what,
Metal, Reptile, Justin Seifert.
Wait, aren't these like characters from like Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat? No.
Justin Seifert with his Sentinel, Chase Stein, Nico Monroe, Apex, Nara, Kid Britain, Red Raven 2, Deathlock.
There's a sequel to one of these characters?
Yes. Colin Bloodstone. Anarchism? I don't even know how to say that word. And X-23.
X-23 is the one.
Oh, wait. Also, Darkhawk.
I don't know who Dark Hawk is.
Okay, so you know X-23.
Yes.
What is she?
She is the little girl from Logan.
That's how I felt in this whole... Not a little girl, but that's how exactly how I felt in this book, where I don't know any of these characters. I knew Nico and Chase. They're from The Runaways. But everyone else besides X-23, I had no idea what they were. And they don't really tell you what their powers are in this book. But when... Similar to Battle Royale, everything goes wrong. And then the... It's a story that I've seen before because it's just mimicking Battle Royale, but it's just interesting that these characters are in it. I wish those characters I knew more about. If the whole point of this book is to get to know these characters more, they did a bad job at it because I didn't really care unless it's Nico and Chase and X-23. That's it. Like everyone else, I really didn't care who died or who lived. The story did well, and some of the characters of telling their backstories, but each issue was like a backstory of each character. Till the end, it plays out similar to Battle Royale and any of those other games, like, similar to Hunger Games, if you say too. you could tell what was going to happen, but it also has a weird feeling of the Watchmen in the ending of Rorschach's last thing that he did in a weird way. Like it reminded me of a scene in. Not a scene, but in the comic panel in what was the book I was talking about? Oh God, Watchmen.
Yeah, Watchmen.
But yeah, yeah. I totally forgot what book was that. But yeah, if you enjoy those type of things, I think this book is for you. It's really short. They do have another title after this called Avengers Undercover. I didn't read. Because I didn't really care about the characters and what they're going to do after that. But yeah, it's an interesting book. If you want to read more Marvel. And, you know, if you're one of those type of people.
Cool. That sounds... Well, the first book sounds interesting about a vision.
Yes, yes.
I don't know about the second book. I feel like I'm just going to lose my mind if I don't know the characters' backstories. And it feels like you have to be a huge fan of Marvel to understand.
Yep, yeah, yeah. So I think you have to be that.
Yeah. But that's interesting. Those are both out right now, right? Like
So I read this on Marvel Unlimited. Cool. So I have that right now, and just reading all the stories that I wanted to read in the last couple of years, and it took me like 2 hours to read everything.
Cool. Moving forward, I've done a couple of things, and you mentioned about AI, artificial intelligence. The film I just recently watched that came out this weekend, it was directed by Alex Garland, who is well known for Ex Machina, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
That. Mm-hmm. So he written and directed this new film that's out that I actually talked about the book in our Lost episode. the film is titled Annihilation. It is directed and written by Alex Garland. It's based on a novel by Jeff Vandermeer. It stars Natalie Portman, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Gina Rodriguez, Tessa Thompson, Tuva Noati, I think that's how you pronounce her name, Noati, and Oscar Isaac. For those don't know, this is really quick. This is from a plot synopsis from IMDb. A biologist signs up for a dangerous and secret expedition where the laws of nature don't apply. So the book I read from Jeff Vandermeer last month, I was actually preparing myself to watch this film. Plus, I've had that book a while and just want to read it. And it's a really quick read. It's like 200 pages long, which is like probably like 4 hours if you're a speed reader. I read it in the course of a week. So I just read like each chapter. And it's not that many chapters too. It's probably, I think there's like only like 4 or 5 chapters. I kind of forgot. But overall, the book was really well written. It is from a vantage point of these characters who had no names. You only know them from like biologists, psychologists, and whatnot. They are 4 women in the original book, and then they just do. They explore this land called Area X, and they try to reveal. It's basically written in the point of view if you are someone that's exploring a new territory, and then you don't know any of these characters. Like there, it's very minimal with the characteristics. You're more of like, and it is written by. It's written from the point of view of journals. The main character, which is the biologist. But yeah, I thought it was written really well. And then I think the science fiction of it is well conceived. Like, it's not it's not too much to the point where you like have a headache, but you get the idea what he's trying to come across with the book. So Alex Garland adapted this adaptation, but is loosely adapted. I think he got the rights several years ago, and then he wanted to make the movie, but he doesn't have the budget, so he waited until now to make it. So as for the film, I found the film poignant and provocative. Poignant because there are scenes and shots that I've never watched on screen, specifically for the science fiction genre. And then specifically, there was a scene where what you're listening to versus what you're watching is so unnerving and distraught that it was kind of disturbing, and but yet superb. And I don't want to reveal what that scene is, but that scene was executed really well. It brought a lot of... Like, if you're a fan of the suspense of Steven Spielberg, there's...
Really?
Yeah. It's a scene that's, like, kind of incredible. Like, after...
So it's a scene that I've never seen before, and then I'm not expecting
it. You've probably seen it in Steven Spielberg films, like, the way the intensity is... The volume of intensity is, like, up to 11. But it's just what is going on you haven't probably seen before. But yeah, overall, the film is really, really great, I think. It is challenging. Even though I read the novel, it took several liberties that was completely different, and it told a completely different story, but executed tonally the same way. So, like, it did, the tone is really like how the book is, but the film is just different. It's a departure of the book. But yeah, it's smart, challenging. The cast is really strong. Props to like Gina Rodriguez and Tessa Thompson and Natalie Portman. But those two stars, Gina Rodriguez and Tessa Thompson, really did great. Although they're not like huge movie stars yet, I think they're getting there to the point where they hold their own. Like, they are there with Jennifer Jason Leigh and Natalie Portman in this film. But yeah, I highly recommend, if you want to see five badass women trying to, survive in a unknown area.
Why is the place called Area X?
That is it's just called Area X. It's very sci-fi. It's like, that's how the book described it. But
no, I was wondering if there's like Area A, Area B, Area, and this is Area like towards the last.
Oh no! Like originally, in the book series, it is actually a trilogy that's called the Southern Reach trilogy, which is basically the northwestern part of Florida, which is like land you could hike, and it's like you know, more swamps and trees and nature, basically. And that's how that's how Jeff Vandermeer written his book, because he hiked like a 15-mile height and then just saw these unusual things, and then he, you know, he wrote a science fiction book based on that.
Okay.
Yeah. But I highly recommend Annihilation. I know at the moment it is going to be released worldwide from Netflix, so it might be coming to Netflix soon too.
What?
Yeah,
I didn't even hear this.
This is more of that whole deal with Paramount when they released Cloverfield Paradox. This is the other film that was going to be released on Netflix.
Oh, wow.
They thought that theatrical release wouldn't do anything. Like, they think this film and Cloverfield Paradox was too challenging for audience. But I think this is the right amount of science fiction where you come out, you have this discourse and discussion. Like, so much of it, there's a lot of it, if you understand nature and science, that you will love about this film. And it's not necessarily like a bunch of aliens and blah blah blah, and it goes deeper than that, I think.
Okay.
But that is one thing I did, is watch that film, which is out in theaters. I think it's selected theaters too. Like, I think most theaters are just playing like one or two showings of this film. I really recommend it because of the sound design too. I don't think you could get it unless you have like surround sound, but if you have a regular TV, there is four scenes in this film where sound is the reason why you should watch this. Like, listening it to in the movie theater is really like really like amazing. And then
you said this is not an IMAX, right?
No. It's not shot. I mean, you don't have to watch. It's really shot really well too, but you don't have to watch on IMAX. But the sound design is really good, and the score is really lovely. I forgot who made the score. I'm not going to check right now. the other thing I did was also I supported the first annual Sacramento Latino Film Festival that played the course of 2 days, Friday and Saturday. My girlfriend and I watched films for the second day. Each day had 7 to 8 films. We watched two films, which is I Thought It Was a Party, directed by Victoria Gallardi, which is from Argentina and Spain. And the second film is Translucent, by directed by Leonard Zelig, which he's from Ecuador and Venezuela. Really different two. These two films are really different. There was one film that we wanted to watch, was a documentary, was called Tempest, but that was like the last film to play on both nights, which is supposed to be like the film that is highlighting the film festival. But we didn't get to watch it because we had other plans. But these two films are really great films for indie filmmakers. They both told like just simple stories, but with a lot of complexity to it, with the characters and their and what they want. Their stories, like the second film, I don't want to give away a lot of, but like the first film is about a dinner party that kind of goes wrong. But prior to the dinner party, you get to know all these characters, and then you see this thing that happened in a dinner party. It's nothing like crazy. It's just, it's very like, not melodramatic, but it's dramatic to the sense of like, it's something that you should be appreciated that it's not melodramatic, I guess you could say. And the second film, Translucent, has to deal with suicide. And then for those who had cancer, the character is thinking about suicide, and that was his way out. But I don't want to give away too much. But both are really, really great films that are from independent filmmakers, and I truly support them. I think this is the first annual one for Sacramento to have a Latino film festival, and not a lot of people came out. I think because of promotion of this isn't that great, but it is in I really want more film festivals in Sacramento. I attended like the actual Sacramento International Film Festival. It was pretty big, I'm continuing to support these films, I guess you could say.
What theater was this at?
It is actually in a school of medicine. It was in the UC Davis Med Center, but the classroom side of things. Like it was held in a classroom.
Is it the type of classroom where it goes up rows? Like
a lecture hall?
Yeah, it's a lecture hall.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we sat on desk.
How did they do the tickets and stuff? I never been
free.
To
it
one.
It was free.
Oh, it's free. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
And then they will do one next week too, but actually on the campus of the University of Davis. Okay. UC Davis, Davis, the city.
A different festival or
same festival, one? But they're bringing it to the students because this is more towards the public in Sacramento. And then the second half is more towards the students, but anyone could go. It's still free. I met the director of the film festival. His name is Jaime. I forgot, he didn't actually tell his last name, but he was doing it because he hadn't seen this before in Sacramento. And we're at a time where, you know, inclusiveness and diversity is more accepting. And he wanted to showcase these films because he feels like the representation of filmmakers from these countries are not broad in America, especially nowadays when you think about like, you know, immigration laws and all that. But it's admirable for him to do that. So that is the Sacramento Film Festival, which will continue next week in UC Davis, the school.
Are you going to check that out if they have?
I am going to do that because I want to watch Tempest. I think Tempest is actually, I don't know if it was nominated, or it's getting a lot of buzz for the documentary. It's about human trafficking, the drug cartel. It's kind of like when you read the description of this, it's a documentary, you think it's just a film, like a narrative fictional film, but it's an actual true story that takes place within like 10 to 20 years or something.
What?
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. But I'm hoping to watch that next week. But yeah, that's it. Moving forward from what I've done to the main discussion. This week's main discussion is the Marvel film Black Panther.
A war is coming.
My son, it is your time.
Confrontation ain't nothing new to me.
The Black Panther lives.
You can bring a bullet, bring a sword, bring a war, but you can't bring the truth to me.
The world's gonna start over. This is my time. This ends today.
Unless you force confidence and calculated promises, son, in your conversations.
Black Panther, rated PG-13. Get tickets now.
That is a clip from the film Black Panther, directed and co-written by Ryan Coogler, who's made Fruitvale Station, Creed, and I know he made another one, but I forgot what was the other one. Oh, yeah, those two films, actually. Starring Chadwick Boseman, Michael B. Jordan, Lupita Nyong'o, Dana Guerrera, Martin Freeman, Daniel Kaluuya, Letitia Wright, Winston Duke, Angela Bassett, Forest Whitaker, Andy Serkis, and tons of more people that I probably forgot. In the, this is like the original call list. But yeah, from IMDb, T'Challa, the King of Wakanda, rises to the throne to the isolated, technologically advanced African nation, which his claim is challenged by a vengeful outsider who has a childhood victim of T'Challa's father's mistake. Wow, they actually kind of revealed some of the plot to that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I feel like I didn't go in knowing what was the plot at all.
Same here.
John, you watched it last week with your son. What do you know about Black Panther, and what's your thoughts about the film?
It's one of these characters I don't know well in the Marvel Universe because it never drew me up to the character. Mostly, like I said in the past, I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. I'm not even like a huge Avengers or whatnot, but I'm a Spider-Man fan. So if that character interacts with any of the characters, and that's all I know of. And mostly in Spider-Man world, he mostly hangs out in New York. So there's like no way he can hang around with Black Panther unless they're in Avengers or, you know, together and whatnot. So I don't have really any knowledge of Black Panther. I did read the most recent like Black Panther comic books. I forgot who made it. I think you let me borrow them.
Yes.
Do you know who writes those books?
Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yeah, so I read some of those, and I liked what I read. It's mostly about Wakanda and the future, you know, how futuristic the technology. It's about also the women of Wakanda. I was really surprised about. I didn't know that Black Panther had these type of characters in it. So I only read probably like two issues, but I was interested in it. I probably will be my next thing I'll read on Marvel Unlimited. But that's all I know. I know he has a suit that gives him these powers, almost similar to Iron Man, but no blasters or flying and whatnot. It's mostly the suit is made out of vibranium, and he's a king of this nation, a fictional nation too, in the Marvel. It's a fictional nation. It's only in the Marvel universe called Wakanda, and that's it. That's basically what I know of. I didn't know anything about his heritage, his family, and whatnot. And surprisingly, I really, really love this movie. That caught me off guard about the story. It reminded me a lot of like these, not Hamlet, but these old like
Shakespearean plays.
Yeah, Shakespearean type of plays. Like the way the family, what do you call it? The conflicts of the family and whatnot. And it's just very interesting. You never seen that in the Marvel film. And I'm happy that they had this type of representation in the Marvel film, even with the characters and whatnot. And all these characters are really like, complex, a lot of them, and you find yourself cheering for characters that you didn't think you're cheering for in the Marvel movie, and sympathizing with them throughout the film. And just, yeah, my emotions about this movie is just like everywhere, because I don't know how I feel about certain people and what their decisions and how they, you know, went about it and whatnot. And then some of these characters, I'm all for it, but to a certain extent. But yeah, it's just very different from a Marvel film. They don't have characters like this. Even Thor could have done that, but they don't have this type of like family complication or not complicated, family, like just a this type of just mix of drama, family drama. That's what I'm trying to say. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I love the futuristic Africa surrounding that they had. Like, it's a mix of Blade Runner, but with with culture. I don't know how you say that. Like, it's very like cool the way the stylized. And one of the breakout performances is I'm gonna probably say her name wrong. Letitia Wright, is that her name?
Yeah, that's right. Letitia that? Wright.
She was great. She's probably my favorite character. She plays Shuri. Shuri, the young sister of T'Challa, that's played by Chadwick Boseman. Yeah, she is one of my favorite characters. I know some people are complaining because she is like this trope that you see in movies, especially in superhero movies. But I never seen a teenage version of this, especially a black woman that's playing her. That people say it's a trope, but I've never seen it played like this before. And she seems like smarter than Tony Stark in this movie. The way she designs her gears and stuff like that, it's wonderful. I just love, and she's very funny too in the movie. She brings that youth in this movie that I think a lot of the young people love. My kid loves her, like her jokes mostly of just even her personality. She's it's a minor smart. She is a inventor, in the smart inventor that does all this stuff with for Black Panther, and I thought that was really cool. And she has like one of the best lines. And also I have to say Mubaku, who's played by Winston Duke, is a outstanding character too. Is a character that comes out of nowhere too, with great lines in the movie that you'll remember throughout. Michael B. Jordan is the most complex villain I've seen, next to Loki, maybe above Loki, named Eric Killmonger. That is very like it's hard to say what side of between Black Panther versus Killmonger, because you sympathize for both of them, and just they're just on opposite ends, but they're doing the similar goal almost, but just really opposite. The one gripe I might say about this film is the CGI. There are scenes in here that just straight up look like a video game. That's very, I don't know. I don't know why in Marvel movies they do this. It's like the whole scene just seems like a video game, and sometimes, and I don't like that. It's just there's literally a scene where, it's near the end, but above is like realistic, below is all CGI. And it's like, oh, I can't tell, or I can tell it's CGI because no one takes off their mask, so it's it's not a real person doing that stuff, like, or not even at least try. It doesn't mimic a realistic movement. That's what I don't like about it. But yeah, other than that, that's the only thing that I didn't really like as much. But overall, I really love this film. It's probably my favorite movie this year so far. And shout out to the also the war, I don't know what they're called, and the Black Panther's security guards.
Oh, I forgot what they're called too.
Yes, it's a group of them, but what's her name, I forgot.
Donna,
I told her, her name,
Guerra.
Huh,
Donna Guerra. Who?
The one who plays, I think, Michonne in The Walking Dead. Yes, she is great too in this film. She's going to live long in pop culture as two badass characters. But yeah, overall, yeah, I really like the film.
She's the head of Dora Milaje.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
I think that's how you say Milaje, but I was going to begin my thoughts about it with the gripes about the CGI. I totally agree. I feel like they're saving all that CGI power for the Avengers films.
Probably. Yeah. I don't know how much money is.
There's something about like these past couple of films, or even all the films, where they're, especially these battle scenes like from Civil War, where like they're not fluently correct, like the physicality and everything isn't correct and everything.
There is a scene in Black Panther though that's really great. It's a one track shot that's like, wow, this is so cool. And
that
then
it happens in the casino, right?
Yes. And then, but then the scene towards the end where they're like everywhere, it's like, it just looks everywhere.
With that scene in the casino, what's memorable about it is because of the soundtrack that kicks in.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, in the score. And then I think they spent all their money for the visual effects on there. Mm-hmm. I think they're like, this is going to be the scene that people will talk about the most, instead of like the ending is more like towards like every other Marvel film that ends with a mm-hmm. huge battle.
The battle scene, yeah. That's always in the end.
Which in Thor Ragnarok, in any old Thor films, I feel like that happens.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. So I tweeted about this, and this is what I wrote when I tweet about it. It's so much to unpack, so much to admire, and so much to be ecstatic about. It's inimitably thoughtful and challenging message will bring dialogue, but the impressive filmmaking and performance from Ryan Coogler, and again, will make you want more. Overall, loved it. To let me expand my tweet, the unpacking of the film is difficult yet purposeful. The complexity of the two main characters, like you said, one being T'Challa and Black Panther, and the other being Eric Killmonger, played by Michael B. Jordan. We empathize with these characters and created like this duality that's admirable. I think a film that does justice is a film that creates characters that you are on the fence, not always 100% with them. They tried doing that with like Civil War, but I feel like they did it with this one film with Black Panther, which is great. So, which is inspiring for a Marvel film. A lot of subtext I don't want to get into in this film, which will be challenging for the audience overall. And I think that's really great for a Disney/Marvel film, especially during the political climate and everything. I think it's the right decision to do that. I don't think they did it because of the book. I think it's just because you have Black filmmakers doing it. So this is what their experience are. And I think that is right because of representation and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I love that the themes of Disney overall, when it comes to like the properties, like from Thor Ragnarok and Last Jedi until now, they really want their audience to like challenge the status quo and deconstruct, yes, or rebuild something entirely new. It's more like learn from the past but improve for the future, and I think, yep, they've been doing that the past several films now, which is kind of cool to see, because I think they know what's happening, and then in this world, whether it is in the film industry or any industry or even politics or social issues, I think this is their reaction to it, and I think their message is really, you know, quite well received from the public, unless you're like a hardcore fan of these characters and don't accept any changes.
yeah.
And then shout out to the DP, Rachel Morrison, who's worked with Ryan Coogler. This was a beautifully shot. Like that scene with the casino scene is really great. It is a mix of James Bond and Mission Impossible put together, with having a Black woman, warrior leading that scene. Which is kind of cool, as well as the production designer Hannah Beechler, who was inspired by Blade Runner. That's why it's kind of weird that you mentioned that she was interviewed and was inspired by Blade Runner. And the composer, Ludwig Göransson, who's worked with like Charles Gambino and Community. So all worked with Ryan Coogler prior to this film. So this is a film that made this film better. This is a team of filmmakers that made this film better. Other than that, I don't really want to like discuss the subtext that much, but I think the subtext is a really great dialogue starter for those who are conflicted about like what is going on. I think it's a great way of like deconstructing like what is happening to these characters and why what happened in the end happened, and mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, and his speech in the UN is one of the, yep, best speeches I've seen in a Marvel film. I think it is like, I think we had this discussion off the record, like we didn't record this, but this is going to change, like you said, the Marvel Cinematic Universe
landscape, forever. Yeah,
the landscape. That they, like, I don't spoil everything, but they will reveal something, and then the world will be knowing of this reveal, and then like technology wise, we'll see how the world will, act upon this.
It rivals with Tony Stark's,
yes,
technology. Yeah. It makes you wonder, like, if Tony has this power, how, what will he do with it? And we get a glimpse of it in the Infinity War trailer.
Yeah. So, everything everything about this film I love. It's really cool to see Ryan Coogler doing big things. I've talked about him since day one when Fruitvale Station was this big film. That was like almost 10 years ago, and it's kind of incredible to see him do his thing now. This film was like $200 million to make, and it's almost going to make, I feel like it's going to make $1 billion by the end of this year. So that's kind of cool to see filmmakers like Rian Johnson. I forgot his name now from Thor Ragnarok. But him and Ryan Coogler. Yes, Disney's next big movie is Solo, but like, I think it's not Solo. Wrinkle in Time. So looking forward for that because it's Ava DuVernay. And then,
is there like a movie every month from Disney or
something?
Yeah,
there is. Yeah, because after Wrinkle in Time is Solo, after Solo is Infinity War.
What?
They have the first like half of the year always.
I think I've seen this before like a couple years ago. If Disney only had like a $100 subscription per year, I would pay that just to watch all their movies.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, same here.
In theaters. Like, it's like, oh, this ticket here, you get to watch the movie.
Yeah.
If you just pay this $100. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that.
But that is Black Panther. I think, I mean, I still support the film just because of filmmaking and representation overall. So, yeah, that's Black Panther now in theaters. John, where can they find you in the interweb?
You can find me on Twitter. On the most organized Twitter feed of 2018 at Abaya Arts.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Benjamin Abaya. You can find all of us on thefreakingawesome.com. You can email us at contacts@thefreakingawesome.com. You could follow us on Twitter at TFA Now, which we are, you know, we're getting a lot more followers on that site. Our goal this year is probably trying to get at least 500 followers. Not bots though, not Russian
huge
bots.
Huge goal.
Yeah, 500 followers, but not Russian bots. I mean, it's only the beginning of the year. And then I think next week we'll try to talk about the 18 freaking awesome things of 2018. I think we could now make create a list because I think we've done so much stuff this past 2 months that we could actually make a list this time.
Yeah.
This has been the episode. Thank you for listening. I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
And this has been the Freaking Awesome Podcast.